Hey everyone, this is Mel and I'm your host for the She Dares podcast. She Dares is a community for women. I set it up a few years ago to provide a space for us to feel confident in learning new skills and breaking out of our comfort zones to enjoy life to the max. We only have one life, and if we get stuck in our day-to-day routines, it's really easy to stop experiencing new things. Starting this podcast last year was a completely new experience for me. And if I'm totally honest, every time I record one, I'm stepping out of my comfort zone because it's totally not natural for me to speak openly and I'm not a trained interviewer. But you know what? I did it. I've experienced something new and now I'm getting better with every episode and we are receiving some awesome feedback from women who have benefited from hearing these stories. This makes me so happy and exactly the reason why I wanted to start the podcast. So keep those reviews coming, please. Every episode I get challenged again as each guest I interview gets to give me a dare. This is not necessarily so I can go out and do something silly just for the fun of it, but over the course of a season, I've really seen a positive change in my day-to-day. I totally feel more confident, I've learned new skills, and I've also recognised things that I don't enjoy doing. Once you've listened to the episode, on the following Friday, I share the video reel on Instagram, so be sure to check it out and let me know what you think. And I'd also love it if you do the dare with me. Today I'm talking to Linda Erickson. She is currently transitioning roles at her company at FX Digital. When we met, she was working as a producer in London, and she's worked with teams over the years as a project manager. We talk about a burnout that happened after the pandemic and how coming back from that gave her the confidence to ask for what she wanted, which was a change in role in work and how much happier it's made her. Okay, she's just jumped on the Zoom, so let's get her on the show. Hey, Linda, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you.
It's been a long time since we've seen each other in the flesh, but I'm sure that will change soon.
Yeah. Are you coming over to the UK soon?
Yeah, I hope so. So just for the listeners, would you just be able to give yourself a little bit of an intro to who you are, where you are?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Linda. I am one of the many Swedes living in London. I've been here for 21 years. I work in an agency called FX Digital.
Obviously, I mean, She Dares is about, you know, speaking to inspiring women and sharing stories about times that they broke out of their comfort zones or pivotal moments in their lives. Do you have a pivotal moment that you'd want to share?
I've had quite a few things that I think I've been quite brave. I've been quite good at moving countries and you know, being very self-efficient quite young. I was quite young when I moved away from home and all that, but my most pivotal moment for now is happening right now when I've kind of started to a new role in my current agency. So I'm changing from being a project manager, which I've been a producer and a project manager for a long time, and I recently kind of realized that that's probably not what I do best. So I've kind of come to my agency and my boss and said, you know, I think I might want to change, and they were quite happy with it, which I'm still a bit surprised about. So I was off for a month. I don't know if I've told you this, Mel, but I was off for a month. I was on sick leave because I felt early signs of burnout, and my GP told me that, you know, you probably should do with some time out. And when I came back, which was just a week and a half ago, I'd written a little job spec. And I was very much prepared for them to say, great, and I'm sure you do well in that role, but we don't really have the need for that right here and right now. And then to my surprise, they had just started talking about maybe adding another body to the people's team. And they had been talking about me a little bit, because I've been there for a while and I know the team and I have a lot of empathy for people and I like taking care of people. So, yeah, they kind of agreed. So we're doing that like as a little test run now, which is exciting.
Cool. So what role will that be?
So I've written the job spec myself and I gave myself the title studio manager and people partner. Obviously those two roles don't always come as a package, but my agency is a mid-sized agency. They have never had a studio manager nor a people partner. So I thought if I combined the two, I got a higher chance of buy-in and it's something that I enjoy both of them, the roles, and I think they can quite easily go hand in hand. It's like looking after both the environment and also the atmosphere or the culture and all that kind of stuff in an agency. So I've only just started, but I mean my new director Clayton might listen to this and think like, hang on a minute, we're not done yet. But I felt I was quite brave to do that.
Definitely. I think a lot of people can understand this as well, because I think sometimes we get a little bit caught up in our own heads, and sometimes we don't want to ask for what we want to. And it's just easier almost to leave a job, because they just think, you know, you just make up a story in your head and my boss is always going to say no, or there's definitely not any open role. But what actually have you got to lose by asking? Because you'd leave anyway.
Exactly. The outcome can be what you choose, and you can, you know, maybe if there is a small chance, then if you want to stay, of course. In some cases, people don't want to stay. And yeah, but I think where I work now, I do enjoy the team very much. I really get along with the whole leadership team, and it's a very young agency. So I feel that with my, I've got more experience than most people that of working in a working environment. And I feel that that can be used to a lot more than what it is now. And that's what I want to do. So, yeah, it's nice. And it's also a little bit of a challenge for me to be the oldest person, which I'm not used to. I think 6 months in my where I am now, I felt a little bit like, oh, God, you know, I'm so much older than everyone else. And I feel like you don't want to be the most drunk person in the pub. Because then you're like, oh, hello, what's she on? And all that kind of stuff. So I didn't feel I could relax. But I kind of now I'm just thinking, well, just going to have to, or not have to, I'm just going to embrace it. You know, I can be useful to my advantage.
I totally feel you on the age thing. From one day to the next, you're like, you're the youngest in the agency. And then all of a sudden, you're the oldest. And you're like, What just happened?
Yeah, what happened? Like, people used to say, like, oh, I didn't think you were so-and-so old. And now everyone's like, oh, God, I didn't know you were that old. And it's like, oh, no, you forgot the rest of the sentence.
but
it's okay. I mean, you know, there's nothing you can do about it.
No, of course not. I've actually got the nickname Granny at work now, which I don't mind. Because, I don't mind, though. It's a nice name because they're like, you know, cool granny.
Yeah.
Still sending it, still doing stuff. You know, in a young agency, I think, especially with moving into a more people-focused role, you know, you can use that experience that you have had across multiple agencies that you've been working in to, you know, mentor some of the lesser experienced people as well, you know, because I don't know if you find it, but I definitely do. There's a lot of young interns that just cannot navigate their way through kind of management and, you know, some of the big operational things that it's like, oh, it's so frustrating. It wasn't like this at university. And you're like, yeah, this is kind of real life. You know, we have to deal with things and we can only fight certain fires.
Yeah, it's true. And also I think now when people, so some of them, so my agency now work with connected TV, so TV apps. So it was an industry or a specific or an expertise field that grew a lot during lockdown, because obviously people started to watch a lot of TV. So we've grown a lot during lockdown. So there's been people, very young people that joined our agency, but remotely. So they've never really worked. Maybe they've gone to uni, they've studied remotely, and then they've joined a company remotely. And then all of a sudden now, of course, we are quite keen that people get back and that we meet in real life and you have real interactions that are not work-related. You know, that kind of going to get a coffee for your colleague and have a chat in the kitchen and then just realising that you have a lot more in common than just code and all those kind of more organic things. And so we want people to come back. But for some of our staff, I can imagine that's a very weird thing to do because they've never done it.
It's hard to imagine. But yeah, it's I couldn't wait to get back to the office just for a bit.
Yeah, no, I'm the same. Yeah.
So going back to when you decided to make the switch, what was going through your mind about, I don't know, project management? Because you've been doing it for how long?
I've been working as that for at least 10 years, I think. So my last role before I moved to the role I have now was actually not project management, really. I lost that job during lockdown because they couldn't keep that little global team, which I understood, and I was very sad. I felt like I was on a great path that suited me very well. And then I freelanced a little bit under during lockdown. It's quite stressful, as you know, for everyone. It was stressful in the home and it was stressful being... I hadn't really... planned to be a freelancer. So I found it quite stressful to be that. And then I found myself looking for work, for permanent work. And I kind of just reverted back to project management, to producer, because I felt that that was what I had the most experience in. And maybe if I would have been a little bit truer to myself, I probably would have looked for more similar roles to what I had before. But I didn't really dare to do that. So that's kind of now leading on to what I did now, like actually being honest and just saying, look, I don't want to be a project manager. I want to do this, that I'm better at working with humans. It's quite nice. I feel quite proud of myself.
Definitely. And it's good to recognize that, because I think it's all too easy to definitely just fall back into something that you've done for so many years. It's almost a battle that I face every week. It's like, I know I'm good at certain parts of tech, but I really don't enjoy it. So, you know, was there a time in your life where you really kind of cared about the opinions of others to a point where it impacted you to not do something?
I mean, isn't that teenagers' life and early 20s? And I think I'm quite a late developer. So I feel like in my 20s, I was still reacting to things in quite a teenagey way. Like I didn't really know myself or what I wanted to do. I had no idea what I wanted to study. I remember when I finished, in Sweden you finish like the normal school, the mandatory school when you're 18, 19. I went 4 years rather than three that most people do, because I went abroad to get better at French. At that time, I had grades from 1 to 5 and I had 0 in French. And my parents weren't too impressed. So we have family in Switzerland, so they arranged that I could go there and kind of forced me to speak French, which I eventually did. And then I came back and I had no idea what to do after those kind of mandatory years in school. And then I've just been fluttering around. Like, I found a job at a record label in Gothenburg. And then after 1 year, I went to uni, but I studied some very obscure course called Equal Rights. And it was a long time ago. So then it was mainly me and some middle-aged women who were very bitter and angry. And I didn't have the same experience as all my friends at uni. So I was like, oh, this is not so fun. You know, I'm probably not going to do this very much longer. And I only lasted a year. And then I decided to go to Mallorca to run a bar, to my parents' delight. And then I never went back to uni. Up until that point, I kind of cared a lot about what people thought of me. And I guess I you know, as you are when you're a teenager or a young adult, you want everyone's approval. But slowly but surely then, I think I kind of just thought, you know, I'm just going to do what I want to do and then see what happens. And I had that approach to a lot of things for a long time, that I'm just going to see where life takes me. I didn't really have a plan. And I think I've been quite lucky, but I've also had quite a slow learning curve of becoming an adult that knows what she wants to work with for the rest of her life. And so here we are now, when I'm 48, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to change from this job to something completely different. I guess it's never too late. It would be awful if I was, or if anyone was 65, realizing that they'd worked with a completely wrong thing for them, their whole working life. 5 years ago, I wouldn't have dared to kind of suggest that I would do this, whereas now I dare to. I listened to a talk yesterday by, it was set up by Sanctus, which is an organization that offers therapy sessions remotely, mainly for companies that we use in where I am now. And they were talking about how to create areas of belonging, or like an environment of belonging, in a working environment for belonging. And they had a guest speaker called Claude Silver, and her title is Chief Heart Operator. Or no, that's not grand enough, but it's an amazing title. And she, her job spec is basically instill empathy and touch every single person that work in her agency. It's inspiring to hear about those kind of careers and job titles.
I mean, there's been a huge shift over the last years about, you know, the well-being of people in general, both physical and mental. You know, it's not all about work anymore. So, I mean, it all started with, you know, work-life balance. But now it's very much like, I think, oh, there's a lot of places struggling to hire people because, you know, they're prioritizing their own health and well-being over being sat in front of a computer for 8 hours a day.
Yeah, exactly. And not everyone wants to stay in bigger cities, which has always been like the hub for exciting companies and growing companies. And nowadays, I guess, to some extent, people have realized that maybe that's not so attractive anymore. If you have to pay three times for staying somewhere, you might as well just move back to where you came from, maybe, or like out in the countryside, live in a barn, have a nice life and be close to nature if you want to do that, and you can still work. I mean, that's a challenge, isn't it? Like, I think we're going to have a little bit of a challenge where I'm now to get everyone on board to come in a few days a week, like 1 day or 2 days a week. Because the working environment has to be really, really attractive to convince people to spend one money. To travel in London is awful and uncomfortable travel. It's not pleasant, really. And you lose time. So why would you want to do that?
I was actually talking to a friend about employee retention and stuff like that. So I think classically in businesses, you know, you had like these perks or these benefits where it was like a discount for a bike or a discount for this, a discount for that. And actually now it's much more about, you know, mental health, well-being, you know, meditation apps, something like that, or someone to come in and give you a massage, or also even like community aspect of it. So I think, you know, Strava groups, stuff like that. So you can actually like work out together and things like that could be nice, a nice way to bring people together, both remotely and physically.
Yeah, exactly. Those things are good. And then I've always favored like organic growth. So, when teams come together organically, but so I can't make that happen in my new role. I can't just say this is going to happen. All you can do is kind of make sure that the environment is set up to cater for it. And then you have to hope for the best, really, that people do enjoy meeting up together and kind of go for a walk or go for a coffee or a drink after work or play football after work or something like that. So, yeah, we just have to hope that we can cater for it. I'm going to start playing five-a-side football now, see if I can get more people to join it. Hopefully I don't break any bones. But that's one thing that we that we do. It's quite scary, though. I did it once before I went away. And I never played. Well, I have played five-a-side, but not in those outside cages. And it was just me and like lads. And I'm a big girl. But when someone who is slightly taller than you like goes for a football and you're in a cage with a net, it feels a bit like, oh my God, I'm going to break myself here. But I survived. And I didn't wobble as much as I thought I would be, so I'm quite pleased.
Can I go back a little bit to your mild burnout, as you put it? Obviously, we've talked about burnout before on the show. What were your signs? Because you said, you know, it was kind of like an early burnout and you went to the doctor. Was there something for you that really stuck out?
Yeah, I started to feel very insecure in my work. Like, it came very suddenly. All of a sudden, I just felt like everyone else in the project management team or my peers at work were so much more informed and aware of their projects. They were so much better at understanding what we were talking about, you know, in any of the daily calls we had, or we had a weekly PM meeting and stuff where we exchanged experiences and kind of just chatted as a group. I felt less and less able to compare myself with anyone else. And I also started to feel really like I was a really bad mum to my son. I was sad as soon as I came home, and I was quite short with him. And I felt like a bad partner to my husband, a bad mum, and a bad colleague or project manager. And I just felt really downward spiral. And it came on quite quickly. And I started to contact my GP. From a friend of mine actually pushed me to talk to my GP. And then I met her again after a few months. And she was the one that told me, you have to call your doctor again and ask for time off work because you're not functioning. And then she called me the day after to check if I'd done it. And I hadn't. So I lied. And then the next day I contacted my GP again and said, you know, I don't feel well. And, you know, just was very honest about my feelings. And then my GP said, I'm going to give you a sick note. And I thought it was going to be for a week. And then it was for a month. So I got a bit like, oh, you know, am I really ill? I started to check my pulse, like, oh, am I? I'm really ill. So for the first 2 days, I was like, I'm really ill. I just need to be here and be ill. And then I slowly started to just relax, just sleep for I kind of slept a lot, started thinking about what I could do. And the people director I work now, he sent me an invite to a journaling app. So I started doing that. I still do it. I really recommend that. And then I decided to start to listen to advice from my friends. I think I said in the beginning, I've always been a very self-sufficient young person and now middle-aged person. I always feel I can do everything myself, which is obviously not true. So for the past 2 months, I've been like, okay, if someone advised something that could be good for me, I should probably try it. So I've tried meditation, but I don't think I've given it a good go. So I might try that. But I started doing yoga every morning. 5 minutes only, but
doesn't matter. It's a start.
Exactly, yeah, and I feel like it does make me, like, the first few times I was feeling super stiff, and it's quite disheartening when you. I've been always been very active, and I did a lot of a high impact sport for many years, and then we had our son, and after that I haven't really gone back. So realizing that it's been 8 years that I haven't done a sport. Anything athletic that is really taking up a lot of time and energy for me is quite, you know, it kind of shows itself on your body. And also I'm so stiff. So 5 minutes yoga for my body is quite hardcore, but I'm intending to up it.
Honestly, this is like music to my ears, because this is what I try and make She Dares about, right? It's just trying new things, because we all want to think that we can look after ourselves and we don't need any help, but just doing one new thing or taking advice from someone else and trying it, you have no idea how much impact that can have unless you give it a go. A lot of things don't work for people, you know. Journaling, it's interesting to see, you know, that journaling really, really works for you. I have a bit of a battle with it because I don't like writing. And when I type stuff, it just gets lost in the digital ether of things because I have notes everywhere. Meditation, on the other hand, I'm really trying just to embed it in my practice every single day. Just for 8 minutes every single day, twice a day. But it does take a bit of work, right? But then I just read, well, some time ago, actually, do you know James Clear, Atomic Habits? It's a really good book. So he basically talks about building habits in your life, because of course, like, a habit would be brushing your teeth. That's something that you have to do, and you do it every day now without thinking. And then you can also habit stack things. So if you're brushing your teeth every day, twice a day, before or after that, you could, I don't know, do 2 push-ups or something like
all
that.
All right, yeah.
So you can stack things, or you could do things whilst you're doing something else.
Yeah, I do like those little rituals. And that's really something that I'm trying to get down with now, especially with my 5-minute yoga. I need rituals in my life. I get very frustrated with myself. I get very, like, I don't like losing things. I always said that my whole life, I can't lose things. That freaks me out. So I have to have rituals. And like, when I come home, I have to hang up my keys on a hook, because if I can't find them after half an hour later, I freak out. So I have all these rituals that I kind of have to go through, but I'm not very consistent with them. And that's something that I need to work on now, like, just make your life easier and be a little bit better, like, kinder to myself, really. So I'd make my life easier.
So when you were talking about the burnout and stuff like that, and like the feelings that you were having, were other people noticing that, I don't know, you weren't delivering certain things, or you were more emotional?
I think it's safe to say that my immediate boss, I've got a head of PM and the ops director, were both kind of, we had chats when they were saying, you know, we're moving into a slightly different or more report heavy project management style here. Is that going to be for you? Because I think they could see that that's not my forte. It's not something I excel in. And I felt quite emotional when I was kind of called out for, like, or questioned if I would be able to transform into that kind of project manager. And again, I felt a little bit embarrassed, because I am older than everyone else. So why couldn't I deal with it? You know, why would I feel so stressed about
a change that is only for the better if you're a project manager, obviously. So we had chats. And I think the fact that my burnout came at this time was a kind of a collection of things. You know, it was things from working during lockdown, losing the job, finding a new job, freelancing, finding another job, going for interviews. I mean, I looked at the number of jobs I applied for during lockdown. It's quite like embarrassing. But, you know, obviously people were still trying to hire people, but they're not daring to hire. So there was a lot of dead leads there. But it was such a task. It felt like such a momentous task to find a job during lockdown. And then like having homeschooling with our son that did not work well. And we lived in, we moved house during the end of the lockdown. We lived in a very small place before, like a little cottage house. And it was very cute and dainty and had a lovely garden, which is a luxury in London. But it was like a ticking bomb in there during lockdown. We were all kind of on the edge. And my husband is a hairdresser. He's got his own company, so he couldn't work as well. So we were very like financial worries. So all of that has kind of been locked up inside of me. And then I found a job. And it was straight into a big project that lasted for a year. And then when that was kind of finished, I think it all kind of just came out in a flood of tears.
I think that's what we all still have to remember as well. I mean, the lockdown wasn't so long ago. And people that are still struggling now, you know, we've gone through a lot, all of us.
The one good thing is maybe that people talk about, as you said before, well-being, like physical and mental, and that we can look after ourselves a little bit better.
I always end the interview with what's one piece of advice you'd like to leave the listeners with today?
I think being brave is good. If you want to do something, you know, try it. No one's going to thank you if you don't, for not doing something that you want to do. You know, what's the worst thing that can happen? Probably not as bad as we think, right? I'm going to give myself a dare like that you've been doing. So I've always liked to draw and stuff, and I'm going to, you know, try and do something more of it and maybe go on and try and learn as well, because I've never gone to art school or taken any art drawing classes, and try and do that and kind of see what I can do with that.
Cool. So Linda, obviously every guest gets to give me a dare who comes on the show. Have you thought about one for me?
Yes, I thought about if you could please find your nearest roller skating rink and try out something called roller derby that I've been doing. I started it without being able to skate, so if I could do that and you can skate a little bit, you should be enjoying it a little bit more than what I did in the beginning. But it's basically a little dare in trying to do a full contact sport on roller skates.
Okay, cool.
You do it on a track, like an oval track. In short, you have one person in each team that is the jammer, and they score points when they overtake the opponent's skaters. So there's five people in each team at any given time. If your jammer can get through the big group of all the skaters, she scores a point per skater that she skates past. It's quite a complex sport to understand and to explain, but it's so much fun doing it.
Sounds good. I'm keen. Thanks a lot for being on the show, and I guess we'll be in touch with the roller derby.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Linda's just given me the roller derby dare, and I'm super excited for it, actually. Linda's just found someone. She said there's a Salzburg team, Salzburg Knockouts. She said I should reach out to one of the girls there. She's just given me the contact, so I will drop her a quick email and see if we can get something booked in. How exciting! Patricia just messaged me back and said that I would be welcome to come on Monday for a tryout. So that's exciting. And she said that she would have some skates to lend me and some pads as well, because they're needed. And she also said maybe I should get a mouth guard. That sounds dangerous. Now I'm slightly anxious.
Oh my God, look, I'm stress eating my Haribo, I think because I'm nervous. I'm just about to go in.
Whew, pretty exhausting, but very good. I can skate again. It's been about 15 years, I think. But look, even backwards.
Opponent, it's allowed to block them or to hit them. Blocking means I stand myself in the way of somebody. That's how I block. Hitting is that I actively try to get a legal engagement, try to hit somebody. I will not hit you. Don't look at me. That's scared. So I could like hit you with my shoulder, do a shoulder check and try to push you away a little bit. Or also with my hip, I could do a hip check like this. What I cannot do is push an opponent. Forearms are really, really no-no. And I also could not grab you as my opponent. If you are my blocker and I'm your jammer, I can do everything with you.
I just got back home from doing the roller derby there, and I can say I absolutely loved it. Thank you, Linda, so much for the dare, because honestly, I wouldn't have ever tried it. I didn't even know there was a team in Salzburg. I knew you did it for sure, and it looked cool, but I was like, yeah, my days of roller skating are over. But it is so much fun. Like, the adrenaline actually of being the jammer is awesome, and it's really exhausting. And I think I found my new sport, and I'm definitely going to rope in some girls from work to do it, because it is a lot of fun. If you want to check out how the dare went down, there's a reel on Instagram for every single one of them. Follow us at _shedares, and let me know if you decide to do any of them with me. I'd love to see what you get up to.